The following Dharma encounter with Ron Hogan Green Sensei took place at Zen Mountain Monastery at the conclusion to a week-long meditation session. As you'll hear, Dharma encounters begin with the introduction of a topic related to Zen practice and training. Students then volunteer to present their understanding of the topic or a question for the Dharma encounter teacher to reflect on. The presence of fellow students means that anyone in attendance can benefit from the exchange. We hope you enjoy.
Good morning, everybody. So, as you have heard, this morning we'll be having Dharma encounter. And it's nice to see so many old friends here. Thank you for being here. For the benefit of those who have not experienced this before, Dharma encounter is a face-to-face exchange teaching, very similar to Daisan Dokusan, which usually takes place in a small room. It's confidential. Nobody knows, other than the two people in the room, what occurs there. And this encounter is public, so we all have the opportunity to experience it, to put ourselves there, if you will, to learn from the exchange. And historically, the roots of Dharma encounter go back to the time of the Buddha, when during what we call Ango, the three-month rainy period, the monastics gathered with the Buddha, the senior disciples, and encountered one another and questioned and explored the teachings and challenged the teachings. And so that tradition is upheld here. And at the end of each of the three Ango sessions, we do Dharma encounter. And it's also part of the training for the Shuso, who on the last session, at the end of the last session, not after, but culminating the Ango, Gudra will take the seat and lead us in Dharma encounter as part of the training of becoming a senior student with more responsibility and a model of practice, which he is in the midst of modeling for us. The intention of the encounter is clear. It's to help you wake up. And that has many different forms appropriate to where the student is, what you bring up, what your permission is that you're offering. But underneath all of it is, to the best of my ability, will be direct pointing to your original face, to your true nature. Sometimes that pointing needs to be more conceptual, depending where the student is, what the question is, what appropriate response is to help. But in general, it's going to be as direct as possible under the conditions. I'll introduce the topic, which nobody knows until I introduce it, nor will I know the questions that you come up with. So it makes it for very lively and interesting. But be careful. This is not entertainment, even though it is entertaining. It is not entertainment. It is for a very specific purpose, which I've already said. And it's also an important part of training, so that people who become formal students are encouraged, both when they're ready or maybe when they're not ready, to come up, to come forth, and to seems what to take a risk is, when in fact it's allowing for an opportunity for you to go deeper within yourself. The encounter is open to anyone who's participated in Ango. So if your name is on that list in the back, then you're eligible to come up. makes it a lively and interesting exploration when there's a good mixture of beginners, of seniors, of monastics, of experienced people and less experienced people. So we hope for that. And also a mixture of genders. Sometimes the more aggressive people go up and people tend to stay back, don't get an opportunity. So I want to encourage that wherever you find yourself in that spectrum, put it aside, come up. And even if you don't have a question immediately in your mind, I'll offer you some questions and we can explore that. So we've been working with the Genja Koan as the focus of this Ango. And to me, it's fascinating because, as you may know, the Dogen Zenji's Genja Koan originated as a response to an inquiry of how do I practice my practice, my awakening in everyday life? Is that a familiar question to you? I hope so, because it's the basis of this practice. And so perhaps sometime in the 1230s, when this was written in response to that question, this question is still alive. It's alive in me and it's alive in you, I hope. So Genja Koan, manifesting absolute reality, awakened reality in everyday life, or the way of everyday life. And our practice in enlightenment is not something distant or abstract, but it's realized and practiced in the midst of relationship. And every one of us are in endless relationship. That's our life. No matter how we may not eagerly enter that or eagerly enter that, we are in relationship together. We're Sangha. And so the obvious question is, what does this manifestation of the Dharma for each of us rest on? That's another way to express the question Master Dogen was asked. What it rests on, Master Dogen says so beautifully, is it on your awakening, on your insight, on your understanding? Well, that's interesting. What is an awakened person? What is an awakened mind? Is it Kensho? A specific time and place where suddenly something crystallizes in you and you encounter yourself as the absolute basis of reality with nothing outside yourself? And Dogen holds up the Kenshos of the masters. He lists them. He talks about them. That's those specific moments on seeing a plum blossom or looking at the mountain and many other examples within Zen history. Is it practice? After all, Dogen emphasizes the non-duality of practice and awakening. And so, maybe from that perspective, it is our practice. Is that what awakening is? So Dogen speaks to that as well. He's very clear on that. Practice and awakening are non-dual. And beyond that, implicit and sometimes very much expressed in his teachings, is how is an awakened life, a practiced life, expressed? How is it expressed for you? So on one hand, Dogen points this way. He says, seeing forms with the whole body and mind, hearing sounds with the whole body and mind, one understands them intimately. Yet it is not like a mirror with reflections, nor like water under the moon. When one side is realized, the other side is dark. Well, that's that Maizumi Roshi commenting on says that's a moment of enlightenment. That's when it's being realized. So how does that fit in to practice realization? Is that opposing it? Is it the same? Is it different? These are interesting questions because in some places Dogen points at practice. In some places he points at enlightenment. And in some places he points at practice enlightenment. Where do you find yourself in your practice? Realizing one thing completely, nothing is left. Nothing is excluded. There is no duality, nothing to say, nothing to compare. That's awakening. Yet, in realizing this, Maizumi Roshi comments, we are therefore able, having experienced your wholeness, your boundlessness of being, to function quite freely in the other side. The side at that moment of realization was dark. And that is the bottom line for us, that function. No matter where you may arbitrarily place yourself on the scale of not enlightened to deeply enlightened, which of course, from another perspective, is all bullshit, we have to express our life out of our practice and realization. So all of this teaching is manifesting Dogen's compassion and concern for you and I to awaken and express that in our life. That is his offering. That is what is transmitted from teacher to student. That is what is in this room. That is what is in you. That's what you're being trained in and practicing in. So he's encouraging deep reflection and direct experience. And he's using language as a means of liberating us, which is his insightful genius, of course. So Genjo means actualizing, not just understanding wisdom, not just understanding compassion, but living it. True realization manifests as compassionate action in the world. That's the bottom line. Every moment of our life is an opportunity to practice that compassion. That compassion is the natural expression of awakening, the natural expression of our practice. And so this is what I want to get down to. Maizumi Roshi speaks to three kinds of compassion. He says, for the first, compassion towards beings. Seeing other people suffer, you want to do as much as you can to help them, both by alleviating their suffering and providing them with comfort. And I suspect, I hope, I think, I trust that we all know this, and we all want this for ourselves and others. Second, this is compassion towards dharmas or phenomenon. Cultivating wisdom, you see that beings and objects do not really exist in the usual sense. Let me say that again. Cultivating wisdom. That's our practice. You see that beings and objects do not really exist in the usual sense. What's the usual sense? As something substantial and apart from you. That being the case, seeing that, however we see it, might start off intellectual, but if you're doing this practice, it becomes real for you. Gradually, immeasurably, but real. That being the case, you hope to do something to save them, knowing that is also a delusion. You can't save anybody. There's nobody to save. And yet, having that delusion, you still do the deluded work of saving others. And that's a key thing, a key realization. Have you ever wondered how some people are able to work from a realized perspective with other people's suffering and not get defeated by it? Which doesn't mean that even within that, there may be a wearing down or a defeat. But that too is practiced. That too is within the realization of your own true nature. And that too is understood to not be a problem, because you've seen it to one extent or another. You've entered the process to one extent or another from the first time you sat down on that Buddha's cushion to realize this. And the third thing he points at is having no particular relationship to others. And I want to emphasize that word that he uses, relationship. And I hope to come back to that. Having no particular relationship to others, what you do very naturally and spontaneously becomes beneficial to others. When you are really selfless, it just happens aimlessly in that way. Spontaneously. You don't even know you're doing it. You don't get credit because it has nothing to do with you. You're just responding out of your fundamental nature, which is empty and, from a different perspective, leaves nothing out. So this practice is not self-improvement. And I deeply appreciate Dogen's emphasis on awakening. This is my own personal feeling. I worry sometimes about Zen, about Buddhism in this country, about the tendency to do what I call Zen light. Let's not worry about enlightenment. Let's just cultivate loving kindness and we'll be kind to each other. And I'll be kind to you, you be kind to me, and we all live happily ever after. That is not my experience. I don't know what your experience is. Feel free to express it if you come up. But I worry about that. And so Dogen places the functionality of our life directly in awakening, in which ultimately there's nothing you can say about it. So I'm going to suggest some questions. Feel free to take them up or bring your own. How do you relate to? How do you understand and live your life within Maizumi's definitions of compassion? Let me repeat them. Seeing other people suffer, you want to do as much as you can to help them, both by alleviating their suffering and providing them with comfort. Another form, compassion towards dharmas, phenomena. Cultivating the wisdom that you see that beings and objects do not really exist in the ordinary way that we think they do, in the usual sense, as something substantial, permanent, as something apart from you. That's what we're practicing here, isn't it? This being the case, to hope to do something to save them is also a delusion. Who's saving who? You and I don't exist in the usual sense that we might think of ourselves as permanently a thing. And yet, inescapably, coming out of practice, having that delusion, you still come forward and do your best Didn't the Buddha do that after his great awakening? Sitting under the tree, saying, how am I going to help others? There are no others. And finally, having no particular relationship to others. How about if we leave out the word relationship? Having no relationship to others, why not? Why do we have no relationship from this perspective to others? Are we being cold-hearted and separate? Or is there another way to see it? What you do very naturally, spontaneously, is beneficial to others. When you are really, truly selfless, it just happens. That's the way it is. Another question. If compassion is rooted in wisdom, how do you understand wisdom? We've got the words, but what is it for you? How do you understand the relationship between everyday life and the relations there, and what Dogen expresses in seeing forms with the whole body and mind, hearing sounds with the whole body and mind? One understands them intimately. Yet it is not like a mirror with reflections, nor the water under the moon, which he actually uses as an example later in the Genjo Koan of the awakened mind. Well, how do you reconcile those two? Are there reflections? Are there no reflections? And most importantly, where is the compassion that arises out of this? So that's what I'd like to explore with you. I've already described who can come up. Kiju will start it off, and everyone else is invited to get online. Kiju, the first person, go on. We'll do three bows. Everyone else will do one bow in coming in and in leaving. Go on.
Sho Zenji, if I could address the second question of compassion and wisdom. That's a really important question, personally. I can sometimes feel, if I'm thinking of compassion for people, or sometimes in the context of medicine, it with people that I like, and I do like most people, actually. then in some ways that's not too bad. Things can spring from that. If I find some qualities that I don't like, that's when I find my own sense and I can pull back, which I'm working on. But it's the wisdom aspect, as he describes, of who's doing this, seeing the emptiness in the person and me. That's what the big thing, that's how I can really use some of my everyday life to really see that. So I'm not, quote, just working, I'm actually really practicing the Dharma, because I can't, it's doesn't come naturally to, or did when you were saying it. When you were saying before, I could start to feel what you were actually saying when you were expressing it. It was...
So a couple of things. How sensitive are you to your own suffering? To your own separation, to your own difficulties that you cause people.
I've got more work to do in that.
Okay. So the importance of that, the reason it's worth cultivating a awareness, not just of the superficial feelings that you're feeling in the moment, but sometimes retrospectively, sometimes in the moment, how much you may be hurting or separating or in whatever subtle way you're apart from the person. And of course, we are, in one sense, apart, but we also know that's only one side. And we're sitting and we're cultivating that we're not apart. So as we continue to practice, we might think that the pain of hurting others diminishes, or that the feeling of attunement of suffering diminishes as we practice, but it's actually, of course, just the opposite. We become more sensitized. Not necessarily caught in a way that's destructive, although that can happen, but sensitized in a way that we're beginning to realize that your suffering is actually mine. I don't know about you, but I don't want to suffer. And when I create suffering for you, I am creating it for myself. That is the bottom line. That's what this whole practice, in a sense, rests on. That we are not two, even though you are there and I'm here. So that's one perspective, to cultivate when and how you suffer. Because 100% of the time, that's coming out of a misunderstanding of what is fundamentally real, right? That we're separate and apart. So screw you, I'm okay. Or, you know, you're okay, screw me, whatever, however we frame it, right? So that's one perspective. Another perspective is just to study, in no specific way, suffering. Just study it in the context of understanding it within the Dharma. So I do that with politicians, favorite hobby of mine. It's easy to see how when someone in power, when I say politician, someone in power, that could include me in this position, creates suffering. And it's easy to see why. That's the separation. And it's easy, sorry Dogen, to see the remedy. Wake up. May your life go well.
Shosh Sanchi. So in the back hallway, you said to me, you can only do what you can do. How is that, Dogen? Dogen's insight?
I can't say one way or the other. It's Dogen's. I can say that's my experience. And also, that's what I was advised in terms of addressing suffering, myself and others, by Daito Roshi. And you know this. We all, as human beings, have qualities, wonderful qualities. I've been the recipient of one of your paintings, which hangs on my wall. Thank you. And we all have places that are difficult for us. So, karma, okay. But it doesn't matter. Because the vow is to do whatever we can do. At least, that's how I understand it. So I can't do what I can't do. It is not appropriate for me to go to Sudan and feed the starving. In fact, that would be, in a way, very inappropriate for many reasons. So I live my life doing what I could do. I pay a lot of attention to that. And I know you do too. You do what you could do. I see it in action.
So I just have, thank you for that clarity. I have a further question, and it may just be linguistic, like language-based. But does that also include you can only be what you can be?
I'm careful of that. I don't know what I can be. I have no idea. Sitting here at this time in my life was not in the top 10,000 things that I ever imagined when I was 30 years old. I can't hold it. I don't think you can hold it. That's our experience. How wonderful.
Indeed. Thank you for your teaching.
May your life go well. I'm recollecting when I was a student, and that Orshi would give Dharma Encounter. Given me and my personality, I always wanted to be online. And so I made sure that I took a seat right there and could get online. Just noticing three white robed people with vast experience in getting online, coming up. Hi, old friend.
Hi, Shoshanji. And it has been a while since I've been online, so. I'm having a reaction to like spinning compassion around, and let me just organize this a little bit.
Yeah, take your time.
I think that I am playing with the tension between, kind of polishing the mirror or there's no stand. And, I am going to cause suffering. I do it all the time.
Me too.
Yeah. And I'm the recipient of it all the time. And that's a complicated mess. And I think where I try to compassion, I have only me that I can, I can work with. Mm-hmm. And also, I always want to try to, how do I kind of give that away without that being a thing that I'm giving away, that feels so intellectual to me. Mm-hmm. I guess in the Genjo Koan with compassion is something like Shugen Roshi said yesterday in the talk, I don't know what freedom is. I can say everything's included and I can be free with my hate and my love, and I can be spaced out sometimes, and sometimes I'm clear, sometimes I'm not, but I don't know what that is, and I think that scares me. Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know. I just wanted to just present my suffering on that, and I'm not quite sure. Sometimes it scares me, sometimes it doesn't, but I really want to nail it down. This is what it is.
That's called suffering.
Yeah. Well, come on. Are you going to free me or something?
I can't free you. But what are you going to do about what you just described? And I realize you're using words to describe something that is both bigger and more fundamental and ultimately not so easy, if impossible to describe. It touches right at the heart of why we're here, the suffering of others, our suffering. But what are you going to do? What will you do in the specifics of a given situation involving that kind of pain, yours or others? What will you do?
Well, I will feel my pain I'll understand my feelings, and sometimes I'll know when I have to not regard my feelings. Like, I want to play that tension.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I let it all go. I don't know how I do that. Sometimes I do. And I can, there's a certain kind of feeling that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And then also let go of that too. When I mean let go of it, I mean experience it.
I understand.
Yes. I don't mean doing anything.
Just slightly coming at it from a different perspective. Because my question is, what are you going to do? How do you do this?
Oh, I love you and I miss you.
Exactly. And what are your vows? Are they alive for you?
Yes, they are. And I, you know.
That holds you.
Yes, my intention and my vows.
Your intention and your vow, what you aspire to, what you're in the process of aspiring to, and practicing and realizing. You're in the midst. And you, like me, like each of us, like was just expressed with Sege, we have to be responsible for that. We have to make choices, right? Some of it are common sense. I'm not going to Sudan. For obvious and many reasons. Some of it is more subtle. Some of it, I haven't considered that.
Well, there's a lot of things I haven't considered.
Right. So the vow keeps that alive. It keeps me desperate. I'm desperate because your life is at stake. And if your life is at stake, my life is at stake. And so that is the fuel, bodhicitta, which burns. It burns for me, and I think it burns for you.
It burns.
And I trust that. I don't know anything about it other than what I'm experiencing, but I trust it. And out of that trust means I have to consider things that sometimes make me uncomfortable or afraid or fearful. But you know what? From one particular perspective, I don't care. I mean, I don't want those feelings, but I don't care because the vow is there. And that's how I understand it.
Amen.
May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
I just want to say one thing. Please forgive me. The fact that I can't go to Sudan and save starving people doesn't mean I can't do something. And so I do. I do what I can do. Vows, liturgy, other ways that don't need to be talked about. I do what I can do. And I question what it is. What can I do?
So, Sanchi, compassion and awakening. It's clear to me how to practice compassion as a vow and an aspiration. And awakening, even how to aspire to it, is much more elusive for me. I think my experience, at least, is that they are connected by vow, or that's an approach to either and both of them. I found that this week I had a lot of things surfacing in my mind, a lot of emotions and memories. And it was, I think, manifesting in my body because I had some intense pains that moved around. You know, this hurt so intensely, and then it didn't. Oh, but now this hurts intensely. And so it was a very difficult week physically. And yet that somehow helped me to clarify what, you know, why I'm here this week doing session. Because it's not about whether I'm comfortable or not physically or emotionally even. It's a vow to practice compassion and to learn how to do that. And that's about as awake as I get. I don't understand how to aspire to it. Awakening itself.
Yeah. Well, you bring up what I think is an important perspective. You know, so Zen, or in this case, I'm using it, or Dogen is using a particular language and a particular way, and I'm encouraging that wake up and realize yourself and, you know, practice realization and all these terms. But they're just terms. The ways of describing what can't really be described. So here you are. Maybe you can't articulate or relate to the wordage and the idea that you should be awake or strive to awakening. And yet, here you are, practicing. Here you've been. I mean, as long as we've known each other, you've been a dedicated practitioner. That's being driven by something. And sometimes, for some people, me, it's very important to understand that and be clear on, give it a name, give it a handle, and then explore it. For others, doesn't mean much. What is the bottom line, though? You are here. That is the bottom line. And when you go home and interact with your loved one's home, that is the bottom line. And when you go home and interact with people you don't know, don't love, that is the bottom line. And each of us has our own karma in terms of personality, how we understand things, how we relate to things. And in some not very skillful measurement of, quote, awakening, may not be helpful to you. But clearly being here is helpful to you. Helpful to your suffering, helpful to my suffering. And that's enough. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
So, Sanji, this seemed like a really good idea when I was in the back of the line. You got moved up too fast. Okay. I think what I wanted to talk about was sort of in line with what was just said. For me, the path, what brought me to the path and what I found so compelling was the compassion. I've always found it easy to feel for others, and I think in society, sometimes that's seen as a weakness, especially it feels like now. And I came here and I found so many people who made it their life's work to save all sentient beings when, like you said, that in and of itself is an impossibility. And I felt, wow, this feels so home to me. And I've been practicing for a few years, and I've heard so many talks about Buddha mind and that we sit like the Buddha, we are the Buddha. And I think until this week, I thought that was a metaphor. I feel so silly, but I can't believe that there is the possibility of my tasting that, realizing that it's not just something that somebody did and that, you know, sounds really great, but that I could do that. And I have to go to work tomorrow. So I just, I don't know if I have a question, but I felt so moved to say that I just, yeah I don't know.
Well, a couple of things. Even if we actually don't believe that we are a Buddha or capable of realizing ourselves, we're asked, if we practice this, to have a deep faith in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And a deep faith means investigate that, question it, look at it, practice it. Because what's important about that is not our intellectual, superficial way of looking at it. It is what is within us as we unveil it, because it's already in you, as you keep hearing, even though you may not buy it at this any given point. And yet, even though you're not buying it at any given point, at a different level, you're suspicious that it's true. And it's one of the reasons we have the Sangha, because you're surrounded by people who do believe it and have experienced it, are experiencing it. I don't want to put an end to that experience. And it's obvious. I mean, to me, I'm obviously a prejudiced party. This is the magic kingdom. I walk into this Buddha hall, and it's full of enlightened people practicing. I don't want anything else. I mean, how? So there's that. The other thing is you and me are a work in progress. That, I mean, we talk about impermanence all the time. So I'm suspicious of any way that you or I plant the flag and say, this is how it is for me within practice. Because every flag I planted, and there have been many, have gotten uprooted. Oh, but I thought, and it's not like that. You just said that. Mm-hmm. So keep it wide open. Third, it's a privilege to be here. I've been here a number of decades. So some of the people in this room, I knew when they and I were babies in the Dharma. And I don't know about them, but I was a jerk. Maybe I still am in some ways, but I'm practicing that. I've been practicing it. And I've seen others turn their life into the life of a bodhisattva. Many others. It's here in this sendo. And from where they started, didn't seem possible. He thought then, meaning I thought then. But it's not true. It's not true because they made it not true, because fundamentally it's not true. And they practiced that fundamental not truthness. So you're in there somewhere. And that's your job, that's your responsibility. You know, the question always is, at this juncture, meaning every juncture, what do you do now? Right? Mm-hmm. It's yours, it's your life, it's your karma. But also, your life and your karma is my life and my karma, because you affect me, and that's your power. And thus, it's worth vowing to use that power in a way that helps all sentient beings. And implicit in that is an awakened mind. You know, in the ways that I noted, so let me bring this up now, because I'm concerned that I won't bring it up. And I spoke to it a little bit. Having no particular relationship to others, what you do very naturally and spontaneously becomes beneficial to others. Why is there no particular relationship?
There doesn't have to be. we're all connected. So no particular to me speaks to the universality of it.
So that is an understanding. And it's deeper than that. There's no relationship whatsoever in that understanding of compassion. Why is there no relationship?
Because I am the other is I, we are.
Stop it, I am the other. Mm. That's the realization. Or stop us, the other is I. I don't care where you stop. No relationship whatsoever. It's all you from that perspective. But then it has to work. It has to function. It has to actually manifest compassion. And then there is you and then me. And people are suffering. What am I going to do about it? May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Don't look at me.
So, Sanji, you spoke of Dogen and the importance that he places on Kensho.
Among other things, but yes.
Among other things. And I have always sort of wondered whether this emphasis on Kensho is problematic. Because in my mind, so maybe it's only problematic for me, sounds like a goal, sounds like a reward, sounds like, I don't know, rainbows and fireworks. And that the thing that I have always found, I don't know, attractive is the right word, about Dogen and his teaching is this idea of practice enlightenment. Because the only thing that I know how to touch is practice, is activity. And yet, this concept, this Kensho, is like out there. And
it's real.
That's what I hear.
It is real.
How is it not a goal?
What makes it a goal?
A thing that I don't have. A thing that is real. A thing that's important. A thing that's, I don't know, necessary.
A thing that's outside you.
A thing that's outside me.
Yeah. So that's one way to practice. And in the Gyatso Koan, he talks about that very clearly. But he also talks about realization, enlightenment, from practice. Just practice without mentioning the word Kensho. You know, Shikantaz is an awakening practice. It's not just sitting there, you know, paying attention. It's an awakening practice. That when you forget yourself deeply, you encounter what you can't even describe as encountering, as yourself.
Well, I can take it on faith.
But you can continue to practice. You can continue to work with your teacher. You can demand it. And so you pointed at a weakness, and it is a weakness of koan practice, if you will, of realization of, in that way, of Kensho. But every method can be taken up and expose weaknesses in how we take it up. So I'm sure you know the traditional ways of regarding Shikantaza is just dead sitting.
Tree stumps.
Yeah, I mean, so that's real. You just sit there and what's happening? Nothing's happening. You're just sitting there. And I don't mean in a good way. And I'm practicing Zen. And, you know, with some history, whole centers do that. Just as whole centers and lineages only do koan work, and you must pass mu, and end of story, and if you're not doing that, you're not doing Zen. Both miss it. And ultimately, what it rests on is you yourself. It matters less what you do than what's underneath that, what you're aspiring to do, and what's motivating you, and what you, in a sense, use language in a particular way, demand of yourself, that inspires you, that helps you. It's up to you. And yet, if one just sits, objectless meditation, no object, just let the world go through, and goes deep within that, one begins to recognize clearly, not faintly, clearly, that the voice, the thought in your head, the thoughts, the whatever that is, the feelings, is not your true voice. And that can only come out of profound, profound stillness. And that's where Shikantaza invites you to go. You can't go there, but you can practice in such a way that that's where you will be. Excuse my clumsiness of words. Do you understand? It's yours. And you don't like that? Fine. When I say that, that way of practicing, I don't mean anything else. Trust yourself. Do what you need to do, but inquire. Check it out. Work with your teacher. Get deep into it. Look at it. There are a lot of people in this room who've had Kensho. And out of that, have practiced the life of a bodhisattva with compassion to one degree or another. It's always to one degree or another because there's no end to this practice. There's always more. You may not have what you think is Kensho, but I know you enough. I know the life you live enough. And I've known you long enough that I trust completely your practice and what you're doing. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Sure, Sanji. Do I have to hold this? I'll say. I am always a little bit mad at the Dharma for being the way that it is. I don't understand why I had to get my ass kicked so much to start to see clearly. I don't understand why, for me, the path seems to be this like razor blade encrusted trail that I am just invited to keep walking down, and every step I take, there's no turning back. There's just more razor blades back there. And I just keep losing things that once were supposed to make me happy. And I'm in this valley, and I hear about this other shore, and I'm treading water, and I'm suffering. And I have to go back into the world now after 14 months here. And I just know I'm gonna get my ass kicked some more. I got my ass kicked here. And I just want to shake my fist at somebody and say, why does it have to hurt? who set it up this way.
So you don't really, from what you're saying, I'm suspicious of this, but putting that aside, you really don't want to accept responsibility for what you're encountering within yourself as you practice this Dharma.
I think I'd rather shake my fist at somebody else.
May your life go well. Good luck.
Thank you for your teachings.
My name's Aziz. My practice in I can never say it right. Just sitting. In another encounter with you, I talked about kind of doing stuff that feels kind of not in, I don't know the word for it. I was pulling weeds and I didn't know why I was pulling weeds. And it made me think about letting the 10,000 dharmas advance and having compassion for them, where it feels like the times when I best practice compassion is when I'm wondering why I'm doing this. And earlier talked about sensitivity around everything. And I feel like that's, I won't use the word suffering, but that's what I'm experiencing with kind of everything. And it's kind of as like, as I go through it, it feels like kind of like death by a thousand cuts, but I'm realizing less is death and more just, dang, okay. Something else that I have to not think about, but kind of like another inquiry, like keeping the beginner's mind and everything open. And I think I'm slowly learning that, but and like learning how to be mindful with it. But it's more...
But we're putting aside the suffering?
I just realize things are there. They just exist. There's been times I've seen like small trees and great oaks, and I'll be like, they're the same, no young and old. So it seems like I'm slipping into understanding it. But it's more about the right effort aspect, where it's like, I think of it as like walking up a mountain. Each step is each step. And sometimes you gotta know what direction you're going to, but it's like, you can be mindful digging a ditch into like hell and not know it. So it's more about like where to put the energy in. It's like kind of a practice where it's like, I can be mindful while digging this ditch and like planting this tree and kind of keep the open inquiry of why I'm doing it. But it's like, I think bigger picture, like energy, like where should I put my energy wise and like directing my life? Because I've kind of unfettered my life to give myself that opportunity.
When we talked about this earlier in the week, do you remember what I said about killing weeds?
I do, kind of serving the Sangha in a sense, yeah. And I think I've accepted that. I've learned kind of like, I think it wasn't necessarily about the Sangha, but I'm more thinking about like, probably too early for me to think about this, but like the practice of descending the mountain, where I think there's a lot of times in work where it's like, there's a tree and you gotta cut it down, and you gotta cut another tree. I think it's more like, this Western idea of like everything's a resource, where it's like for a long time my only way to deal with it was kind of like non-action, but it's learning like right action, where I'm like, I don't know where to start because it's so kind of like anti-Western in a sense.
Well, putting aside those characteristics, those characterizing something in a particular philosophical way, there's obviously different ways of understanding picking weeds or cutting down a tree. And how you understand that makes all the difference in your karma and in how you cut down the tree. I've cut a lot of trees down in my life. And every one of them I bowed to before I did. Every single one of them. And I, at one point I lived in a house that was fueled by fireplace by those trees. So isn't that interesting? I'm killing a living thing that doesn't want to die so that other living things, in this case me, but beyond that, can exist. We all know you can't exist at all without killing.
I think I've begun to realize that.
Yeah. So there's no pretty picture here that matches something in our mind that says, oh, I'm going to make this right in a particular way, and if I just understand it this way and I don't have to do it that way, then it's fine. It's not fine. In this situation, I sometimes go like this. You know what I'm pointing at?
No.
The First Noble Truth. You know the First Noble Truth?
Life is suffering.
It's unavoidable. Now what are you going to do about it? That's always my question. What am I going to do about it? So I do what I can do. I bow to the tree. I need to cut it down. I'm in training here. I've been asked to pick weeds. There's the training. You know, it's equivalent to shut up and sit. Shut up and pick the weeds. But it's against my philosophy. Okay. So you can have your philosophy and treasure that and keep that. But let's see what else is in this cutting of the weed. Maybe there's something for me to learn. Maybe there's a different level of appreciation of life and death. Because right now your body's killing innumerable millions of beings, microbes. This very second, you're dead without it. Well, why don't you save them?
It's kind of nice to be alive, I don't know.
Yeah. Isn't that selfish?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean like, oh yeah, like I'm getting, yeah, no. No, it's not selfish, yeah.
May your life go well.
Shosanchi. I've been pondering a recent situation and realized it had something to do with your first question about compassion. My son and his family were visiting. We were all staying in my house. And something really difficult happened. My grandson got quite ill. And my daughter-in-law was understandably, you know, very upset by this. She was really suffering, very turned inward. And I wanted to comfort her, but she didn't want comfort. And I wanted to help alleviate her suffering, but she didn't want that. And this is a part that's been troubling me, but in response to that, I felt angry and hurt.
That you had what?
I felt angry and I felt hurt. And internally, I was quite judgmental. And so my question is, how do you approach that when someone turns away from you? Turns away from everyone. And my concern is that I added to her suffering. Even though it was internal, I'm sure it showed.
Yeah. I think you probably did. Why? How did that happen? How did you add with, quote, the best of intentions to her suffering?
How did I?
Yeah. What was your actions based in?
Separating myself from her and from the situation.
Yeah, who are you
serving? And saying, I don't like this in one way or another.
Right. Exactly.
This is not how I wanted this visit to turn out. Yeah.
So all that is not how I wanted the visit.
Right.
I'm separating. It's about her, right?
Right.
No, it's not.
No, I see that it's about me. Yeah.
So that's the challenge, right? That's why Dogen says, see what that me is. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in a discreet way. Even if you have a Kensho, that's just the first page of an endless book. And even if you're just sitting, that's no book at all. It's just endless. So we practice that. Compassion is the relative presentation of no self. That's one way to put it.
Yeah.
And of course, we all have a self. We're all practicing. We're all deluded, right? Mm-hmm. And even when we try and help people, we're deluded. Mm-hmm. Mizumi Roshi talks about that. So to understand and to work to be clear. So there's somebody close to me who's quite ill. And when they're ill, they don't do so well in relationship because they're defeated by it. And I'm the person they can take that out on. That's okay. Mostly. And I ask myself internally, what does that person need right now? And often it's for me to shut up and go away.
Right. Space.
Another way to frame that is, how can I love that person? How can I deeply respect them, their essential nature, their Buddha? Because this is about fundamental respect for them, meaning for me as well. And sometimes I can't do that. I just can't. I'm, you know, doing the best I can with my limited equipment. That's what comes out. And I have to accept responsibility for that. And you have to accept responsibility.
Yeah.
And in that acceptance of responsibility, real acceptance, acknowledgement, it's painful. We know that.
Yes, it is.
But something is happening. So I'm going to put quotes around, you're practicing it. But that kind of doesn't reach the reality of the pain, which to one extent or another, depending on what happened, will always be there and will affect the relationship. And so the question does come down to, what do you do now? What's the most helpful thing for her,
right,
not for you?
Right.
Because it turns out, interestingly enough, when you look at it in those terms,
it's not about me.
It's not only not about you, but you're helping yourself. It's so ironic. It addresses the question, if you'll accept your suffering as practice. If you won't accept your suffering, well, someone was up here, right? Good luck on that path. All right.
Thank you for your teaching.
May your life go well.
Sanjay, good morning.
Good morning.
You said you were worried about the future of Zen because, to paraphrase, we may be more worried about being kind to each other. I give you explicit permission to not be kind to me right now. I'm serious. Why, here's my question, why did you come here?
Why did I come to this place?
However you interpret that. Why did you come here?
Suffering.
I hear that from everybody.
Not everyone comes here because of a sensitivity to suffering. There are other karmic reasons people come here. This is how I relate. And it's how I understand the Buddha related. Quote, I teach one thing, right? Suffering and freedom from suffering. And that's how I understand what's going on here. And there's a lot of ways to understand suffering. It's worth, as you know, studying the First Noble Truth and what actually he was pointing at. I mean, there's, right, the obvious and the very subtle, all of which comes out of staking ourselves on our self-centered views, which we all do to one extent or another. It's part of being a human being. You have to have that. But there's a problem. And so, why are you asking me why I came here? What's important is, why did you come here?
Yow!
And what are you going to do about it? You don't have to answer that question. It's not important what you tell me. Because you already understand why I'm asking that. You already know what you have to do. May your life go well. You know, in my early days here, Daito Roshi would proudly take what he called the high seat for what he called Dharma combat, which is the perhaps more traditional Japanese-based understanding of that particular. And it was combat. I mean, it was, killed a lot of people up there. And he couldn't be defeated because he was that clear. Times have changed. My understanding has changed. Back in those days, as noted, I always wanted to fight with him. You know, match his understanding against mine. That was the energy that was younger and stupid and so on and so forth. And as I went deeper into the teachings of Dogen, one of the things I tried to bring forth today, I asked, what is enlightenment? And that came up. Kensho, not Kensho. Shikantaza, practice, not practice. Dogen's great at that. What is he saying? I mean, in the same fascicle, he approaches it from here, he approaches it from here, approaches it from here. He approaches it, there's no such thing, separate. There's two separate things, practice and realization. Where's the handle? And when you put a handle on it, what happens then? And so Dogen says over and over and over again, you should study it and study it and study it some more. What is he inviting you to do in that study and study? Come to an answer? He's inviting you to wake up. That's what he's inviting you to do. To understand that you don't understand waking up, but you study it, and it studies you. That's the interesting thing about the Dharma. As you are studying it, it's studying you. It's finding your karma. It's telling you exactly, because you'll suffer there, where you need to put your attention, those places. It's telling you, which includes me, which includes us all. And as human beings, that's why he can say practice is endless. We're human beings. We create suffering. We're designed that way. It's built into the model. You can't exist at all without killing. So, in a way, I have a deep appreciation for this because I understand this very differently. And me being who I am, I welcome Dharma combat. Just, okay. But that's not what's really, I mean, it can help. But a lot of other ways of working, of exploring together, of asking questions, of not knowing, of knowing, of using your inherent wisdom are available to us. And that's what Dogen is asking us, inviting us, bringing us into. And so, you know, if you just pick up Dogen, I remember doing this, picking up, early in my practice, picking up the Shobo Genzo and reading it. And, you know, I'd read a chapter before I'd go to bed because it would put me to sleep and not understand a single word. I mean, what the hell is he talking about? I wasn't capable of understanding a word. And later, when I thought I understood a word, I still wasn't capable. In other words, there's still more. My capacity had changed because I had practiced, but it was, oh, oh, oh. I mean, it's one of the reasons I loved art practice here. That taught me as much or more than anything else because I don't relate to it. It wasn't my education, wasn't my background. And so I had to go someplace where it could teach me, where what I call, this is me, the muse, had permission to come alive. Something I know nothing about. I don't know that process. And yet, in entering it, something comes alive. Does that sound familiar to you? Do you do an activity where that is encouraged? We sit. We don't know what sitting is, but something comes alive. And one way to understand that is you're waking up to be able to live a compassionate life and offer it. That's one way. There are others. But that's pretty primary. So Dogen is inviting us to enter the Gendra Koan with the whole body and mind. Hear it with the whole body and mind. Relate to it. Study it. And here's a promise. However you relate to it and study it during the Sangha will be different than how you relate to it and study it next time, whenever that is. I think this is, what, the third time we're taking this up. Why are we doing it the third time? Didn't we get it the first time? So please, please understand that you and I are a work in progress. We're practicing to be a Buddha. And luckily for us, we have a way that shows us here's how. May your life go well.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.